Chapter 2, March 1817. Secundus watched with no small amount of curiosity as Childemas dealt and turned his cards over and over on the empty seat. They had been traveling for some hours, and Childemas had been consulting his cards for most of that time. He sometimes seemed satisfied with what he saw in the pictures, sometimes irritated, sometimes amused. To Secundus, they were as impenetrable as the carvings of Egypt, the images sometimes revealed for such a short time that he could not even get an idea of what the picture showed, before Childemas swept the cards back into his hand to shuffle once more. "What do you read in them?" Secundus asked when his curiosity could no longer be restrained. "Only what I ask of them." "And what is that?" Childemas looked up at him with a shadow of amusement in his eyes. "How we will fare in this venture, what the outcome might be. What the posting inn might be serving for dinner." "Could you read me?" Childemas fixed him with another look he could not interpret. "I don't require my cards for that, sir." Secundus thought there might have been a laugh tucked away at the corner of his mouth. "But if it will please you." He inclined his head to Secundus and shuffled his cards. He laid 9 cards out face down on the bench in front of them. "How does it work?" Secundus asked, leaning forward.
3 for the past, 3 for the present, 3 for the future," Childemas said, moving the sections slightly apart as he spoke. "Let us see what we have, then."
He turned the first 3 cards over, revealing the crudely rendered pictures.
6 de coupe, 13,
a card without a name, but with a picture of a skeletal figure wielding a scythe. Secundus shivered at the sight of it.
5 de denier.
Childemas studied these for a moment, his fingers grazing the middle card lightly.
"You had a happy childhood, better than most could wish for, but it was brought to an end, I think because of a death. This card can be metaphorical, but here I feel it's literal. Apparent, perhaps?"
He looked at Secundus, his eyes curious. Secundus nodded. "That death brought you to financial trouble." He turned over the next 3.
8 de denier, cavalier de coupe, 7 de bâton.
"You have been dedicated to your studies. This," he said, tapping the middle card with a smile, "represents you. I have seen it before, and that is what I have come to see in it. Your main preoccupation is your profession, and this last tells me that you are finally feeling confident in it, and you are starting to see some success."
He looked up at Secundus, and there was a definite twinkle of amusement in his eye.
"But we knew that."
He turned the last 3.
18, le soleil, 6, l'amoureux, roi de coupe.
Childemas laughed, and the suddenness of the reaction seemed to surprise him as much as Secundus.
"What is it?" Secundus asked. He was nonplussed to find he was nervous.
"There are a number of ways I could read these."
He put his hand flat beside the cards, his thumb toying along the edge of the King of Cups.
"But it is a positive set, no matter how it is interpreted."
He shook his head at some private joke.
"You will make a success of things and be in control of your own actions for the first time. These 2, he tapped the last 2 cards, "could mean any number of things. I am tempted to say it means you will make choices which will increase your knowledge of yourself."
"What else could it mean? You said you are tempted to say that, but not what you truly think it means."
"I think it means you will fall in love with a person of some importance."
"Oh." Secundus could feel his cheeks heating under Childermas's amused gaze. He asked, as a distraction, "How does it work? What is the magic?"
"There is no magic in it, far as I know. Certainly no conscious magic, not like casting a spell. It is practice and knowledge combined."
Little as he knew of the art, Secundus was inclined to believe Childermas on this point. He was getting used to the sensation of magic being done, the itch just beneath his skin, the tingle at the crook of his elbow, that accompanied most feats of magic, no matter how small. He could feel nothing of the sort as Childemas read his cards. The rest of the journey was taken up with Childemas patiently explaining the cards and answering Secundus's questions. He spoke at length and with a natural authority, describing the minor arcana, how the suit of cups represented emotion, and how it stood, in Childemas's mind, for magic. The wands were action and inspiration, the coins money and career, the swords thought and logic. The court cards, he explained, sometimes represented people. This was why he had known Secundus for the Knight of Cups.
magic and studiousness personified, with intuition running through him. That could describe any number of people, Segundus pointed out. It seems to me there is an imprecision to this form of divination. Cast the net wide enough and you can tell anyone's story. You were unhappy with my reading? Oh, no, sir. It was most edifying and most correct. I just do not see... Childermas laughed. You are unconvinced. He carried on with his lessons, shuffling the cards and showing them in turn to Segundus, describing the major arcana as they appeared. He told him of the meanings of each, and how that meaning shifted depending on its position in the spread and which cards lay near it. They carried on this way until it grew too dark inside the carriage to see the cards, even once the lantern was lit. It is like mixing paint, Segundus put forward, uncertain, when Childermas had finished. This earned him an expression of such open curiosity that he felt a rush of confidence to continue. Red will combine for a different meaning with blue than it will with yellow. You are a quick study, sir, and remarkably perceptive, Childermas laughed. The important thing is to frame the question correctly. If you ask the wrong question, you will receive the wrong answer. What did you ask for my reading? I merely asked them to tell me about John Segundus, that is all. He sighed and leaned back in his seat, an eye on Segundus. Getting the history of people is easy. It's written all over them, and they carry it with them wherever they go. It is the more precise questions that are more difficult. The last cards, my future, Segundus said, feeling his cheeks heat, although he was uncertain why they should. Is there a way to narrow down the meaning? There is, Childermas said, but offered nothing more than a teasing smile. They passed a few minutes in silence, Segundus looking at the blackness out the window, and Childermas looking at Segundus. It doesn't do to rely on them too much, he explained. The cards are to act as guides, not dictators. Which card represents you? Segundus asked. If I am the Cavalier de Coupe, and Norrell is l'Ermite, there must be one which you know is yourself.
That is a very personal question, sir.
Indeed, I meant no imposition.
It is quite all right.
That odd glint of amusement had returned to Childermas's eye. I used to think of myself as the valet de bâton, but I feel like my position has changed recently. Segundus's next question was interrupted by the carriage rolling to a stop and Davy opening the door.
We're at Grantham, sirs.
Get the horses settled for the night, then, Davy, Childermas said, scooping his cards into his pocket. I'll get the rooms sorted out. There were, it turned out, two rooms available at the inn. The innkeeper thought this fine, as it provided a room each for Segundus and Childermas, and there was a room over the stables for Davy and Lucas.
No, sir, Childermas said, bristling. The men will have a proper bed. They have more need of it than I do. I will take the stable.
Indeed you will not, Mr. Childermas, Segundus objected. I dare say if Davy and Lucas can share, then we can too. Unless it is disagreeable to you, but I must say I have no objection.
Childermas turned to level a look at him, heavy and penetrating. Segundus met it and held it until Childermas shrugged. The innkeeper watched this silent exchange warily, but was glad to take the money Childermas pushed over to him with a gruff, "You heard the gentleman." He took the room keys from the innkeeper and handed one to Segundus before leaving in a swirl of his black cloak.
"I'll send up some hot water and towels for you, sir," the innkeeper said uncertainly, his eyes on the door Childermas had just left through.
Segundus was overcome with the urge to apologize to the man, to explain Childermas to him, but found he was unable to. He settled for a simple thank you, and went through to the public parlor to wait.
You did not have to do that, sir.
Segundus, who had started reading and become engrossed as he waited, nearly leapt from his skin at the sound of Childermas's voice. He slid neatly into the chair across from Segundus and pushed a tankard of hot spiced ale over the table to him.
I wanted you banished to the stables as little as you wanted Davy and Lucas, Segundus explained.
Are they joining us?
Nay, said Childermas. They prefer the company in the back of the house.
Segundus looked up at him at that. There had been a queer note in his voice. And you? He knew of the fondness Childermas had for the hurt few servants, how hard he had worked in negotiating with Mr. Robinson the terms of their employment with Norrell, given the unusual circumstances. He remembered the intensity in his eyes when he had come to Staircross to put forward the idea of hiring on the displaced workers. As Charles and Henry might do you well enough for now, but as your business grows, sir, you will be glad for staff with experience of working for a magician. He had seemed taken aback at Secundus's eagerness, as if he had been prepared for a fight, and at his offering of using Staircross as a meeting place where Childermas could inform them of developments without putting out the likes of Mr. Hodgson. He hoped Childermas felt under no obligation to keep him company now, if he would rather spend time with the others, and was about to give voice to this when Childermas spoke. "A man can take a great deal of comfort among his own class," he said carefully. "But I find myself content in the current company," he added, "meaning no disrespect, sir," with a teasing smile. "That is quite unnecessary, Mr. Childermas," said Secundus. A smile pulled at his own lips as he added, "I have found that when you mean disrespect, you make it quite clear." "Aye," said Childermas, with a short laugh which came out more of a snort. "I have been accused of that before."
"I rather admire it," said Secundus, clarifying. "Your forthrightness, I mean."
Childermas looked at him over the rim of his tankard, and Secundus could not quite make out his expression. It made him itchy, being looked at in such a penetrating manner, so he wrapped his hands around the warmth of his own drink and looked down at it. He looked back up when Childermas took a breath as if to speak.
"I say, you there!"
The voice harked from across the room, and Childermas's shoulders stiffened almost imperceptibly and his mouth snapped shut, his lips pressing down on the last remains of his smile. The parlor was quiet enough that there was no doubt at whom that statement was aimed. Whatever was about to happen, Secundus saw that Childermas had experienced it before. A large gentleman with bristling gray whiskers and eyebrows strode over to their table.
"Can I help you, sir?" Secundus asked, and the gentleman seemed taken aback to see him.
Childermas looked equally surprised at this interruption.
Good evening," the gentleman said, swiftly regaining his footing. "I hoped you might spare your man for a few minutes. Our coachman is struggling with my wife's valise, and there are no staff about. I do not know what kind of service this establishment promises to provide, but..."
"He is not my man, sir," Secundus interrupted, as he could see the man's rant going on some time.
"He is my colleague, and quite his own man. You will have to ask him for aid yourself."
He thought it was quite the stiffest manner he had ever used to address a stranger, and was inwardly rather pleased with himself. The man stopped himself short and looked between the two. His copious eyebrows seemed to roam his face like two caterpillars. He opened his mouth and closed it again several times.
"I am sure the staff have important business to attend to," said Childermas to the gent, turning in his chair to regard him fully and flatly.
"No doubt they will be with you shortly." Secundus dreaded what the man would say to be spoken to so curtly by a man of Childermas's class, but luckily a woman came up and seized his arm to pull him away, saying, "Joseph has managed it, my dear, with the help of some boy from the stables. Come now." The man managed to gruff, "Well, I never," in Childermas's direction before he was drawn out of the room.
Secundus watched them go and took delight in Childermas's slow, lopsided smile as they turned back to regard him.
"Colleague, eh?" Childermas leaned back in his chair, throwing an arm over the backrest.
"I hope you do not find me presumptuous, but I thought..."
"You best be careful, Mr. Secundus. I may come to like that."
Secundus had to take another drink in order to hide his smile and the flush creeping up his cheeks, and was relieved when the serving girl brought out their dinner. As they moved to retire, Childermas went to check on Davy and Lucas and to discuss the plans for tomorrow. Secundus thus took advantage of the privacy of the room to ready himself for bed. The room was large and dark, lit only by the flickering of the fireplace. Secundus took his candle and used it to light the others around the room, which only improved upon the gloom marginally. He freshened himself up with the hot water, glad to note that the innkeeper had sent up two bowls so Childermas would have fresh water after he was done, changed into his nightshirt, and slipped into bed. He found that he tired quickly on these long journeys, even though he felt he should have grown accustomed to them in the early stages of Staircross when he was up and down to Bath with regularity. He could not fathom how Davy dealt with it, nor Childermas. With a sigh, he picked up his book and began to read. It was a volume he had read before, and one he set no real stock by, but which had been mentioned in a letter from Mr. Knight, and he was soon so involved in jotting argumentative notes in the margins with his pencil that he did not even notice Childermas entering the room. It was simply as if he was not there, and then he was. It was the splash of water in the basin that alerted Secundus to his presence. He glanced up to see that Childermas was stripped to the waist. He hurriedly looked back to his book.
"It's a kindness you're doing here."
Childermas's voice was a low rumble, and Secundus glanced up again. Childermas's shoulders were slighter than he would have imagined, and a good deal paler than his face and hands. "Do not think on it," he replied, hoping his voice would not tremble. I could never refuse comfort it was within my power to give.
Davy and Lucas are overjoyed.
Childermas laughed and rolled his head around his neck to ease the cricks of the day. Segundus found that he could not quite look away from the harsh angles of him.
Well, they were when they were awake.
He pulled his nightshirt on over his breeches and shucked them off from under it.
Segundus quickly looked back to his book.
I am glad for it. I hate to think of them spending all day sitting out in the elements and then given only a straw pallet at night. I would hate to think of you there, too, when there is more than enough room here.
It is more thought than most men would give it, Childermas said, and he slid beneath the covers. The bed was large, overlarge for the room, really, but Segundus felt the heat from him.
Now, he began, and Segundus looked up to see a wicked smile directed at him.
I have not shared a bed with a gentleman in many years, so I cannot promise that I will be an agreeable bedfellow.
I only hope you'll accept a similar apology from me, Segundus said, feeling a little more at ease. I have been known to leave books scattered among the sheets. Charles is never short of complaints come morning when he straightens it out.
Childermas let out a short laugh and settled down on the pillow. I will make sure you lie on a corner if I find one. Good night, Mr. Segundus.
Segundus placed his book on the table and snuffed out the candle. Good night, Mr. Childermas. In his dreams, Segundus found himself addressing a room full of geese. These geese, he knew, were members of Parliament, and he must make them understand the importance of magical education. The geese did not listen, but strutted around the grand room, honking rather obnoxiously and chasing members of their rival party attempting to bite them. Segundus himself had to step hurriedly away from a vicious beak more than once. The dream ended with him chasing the goose he knew to be the Prime Minister, as he needed a very particular feather from his wing to make a pen in order to make proper notes. He had just managed to seize the goose and pin its wings to its sides when it turned its head to look at him. It regarded him with a rather baleful expression and neighed. Segundus woke, with that particular confusion which follows unusually vivid dreams. He heard the neigh again and realized he still held the goose. It took a moment for the waking world to reconcile with the aftereffects of his dream, and he realized that the sound of neighing was in fact coming from outside the window. It was a moment longer before he realized that the warmth in his arms was not, in fact, a goose, but an arm. He blinked his eyes open, bleary and confused, and saw Childermas looking down at him in some amusement. In no time at all, he let go of his grip on Childermas's arm and removed himself to the very edge of the bed.
Oh, I am sorry, Mr. Childermas, I thought you were the Prime Minister.
The wry smile on Childermas's face turned to outright amusement, and Segundus realized his error. His face flushed scarlet. Childermas said nothing, only looked at him, and Segundus could not be sure this was worse than whatever response he might make. From outside came the sound of joyous birdsong and the less joyous calls of men riding horses. A goose honked in the courtyard, and Segundus flinched.
Well, sir, Childermas said at length, now that I have been released.
He cocked an eyebrow as a smile crawled up one side of his face.
I will see to the preparations.
Childermas washed and dressed quickly and left the room. Segundus let out his breath and closed his eyes for a moment, covering his burning face with his hands.
It could, he tried to tell himself, have been worse.
They ate a quick breakfast and left before 6:30. If they made good time, they would make it to London by evening, Childermas reckoned. They would certainly make Segundus's appointment with Mr. Knight tomorrow afternoon, and the ministers the following day. Davy and Lucas were chipper, and Segundus smiled to see them in high spirits.
"Aye, sir," said Davy, when Segundus commented upon it. "It's a fine day, and the wind is behind us, and the horses are good-tempered beasts."
He clapped one on the rump to emphasize his point, and the beast's skin shivered at the touch, shining in the sun like ripples on a chestnut sea. He wished Davy a good journey, and climbed into the carriage. Shortly after, Childermas joined him, and the carriage lurched into motion, a cry from Davy setting the horses off.
"Let me hear it," said Childermas, a full half-hour into the journey.
Segundus was startled from his contemplation of the changing landscape beyond the window.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Your proposal for the ministers. I know you've been working on it, and it'll do you good to voice it now, rather than waiting till we're in front of them."
Segundus looked back to the window as the morning's embarrassment came back to him. There was, however, no denying that Childermas was correct. He turned back to Childermas with a sigh. And so Segundus gave his prepared speech, pausing and stumbling over the words which had sounded so grand and convincing in his mind, and finding them now flimsy and useless.
He finished, and Childermas made him go through it again, and again, and again, until Segundus was near sick to death of it. Then Childermas gave him edits. He didn't present it as such, but as suggestions I might make. Or, perhaps mention the to-do at Warwick. Segundus had thought himself a scholar, perhaps not first-rate, but used to setting down his arguments in paper and letters. It occurred to him that the life of an orator must be much different. "Oh, I shall never make a politician," he cried, throwing his hands in the air as he fumbled one of Childermas's corrections. "It should be you giving the speech, Mr. Childermas," he said, thinking of the way he had taken control of the room in the Old Star Inn when he had presented Vinculus the previous week, of how he'd wrapped the room in his rough voice and made even the most intractable of magicians listen. "I am not to be the proprietor," Childermas pointed out. "I do not know how you can expect to be a schoolmaster if you cannot give a speech."
"That is magic, sir,"
Segundus sighed and let himself fall back against the seat.
"I know magic. At least with Mr. Knight and the young gentleman I shall be able to discuss Sutton Grove and Lanchester. I do not know politics. I do not know ministers. I am not in the least qualified for this. You are used to dealing with these people. You know them. I have only ever heard of them in the newspapers and in letters from friends. Why should they listen to someone like me? I cannot even afford a new coat."
He scowled at the worn cuff of his sleeve, where it had been clipped back to hide the fraying.
"You are undoubtedly the most talented magician in England."
"They will listen to you, because a gentleman, however poor, is still a gentleman," Childermas said, no small amount of bitterness in his voice. "A servant will always be a servant, regardless of his talents, or of how free he is in his own business. That is something that will not change in the minds of most men, not any time soon. But it is kind of you to believe otherwise."
"Hogwash," Segundus exclaimed. "You are the best man for this job, and anyone who does not see that is a fool."
"You, if you'll forgive me, sir, have the bearing of a man of good education and breeding, whereas I have the bearing of a rogue and a scoundrel. It is immediately obvious." "No, do not protest, sir, I only speak the truth."
Segundus shut his mouth around his objection.
"I cannot do this for you, no more than I could do it for Mr. Norrell, but I can guide you through it."
"I do not wish to be another Norrell," said Segundus petulantly.
"Not to the world, nor to you," he thought.
Childermas laughed.
"I do not believe you have it in you, sir." Segundus was unsure of how to take this until Childermas rested his hand on top of Segundus's, a reassuring pressure through his glove. "And you are wrong, besides. Of course this is magic. All of this is magic."
The carriage creaked to a stop, and they got out to stretch their legs while the horses were changed at Stamford. Childermas went to oversee the changeover, and Segundus took a turn around the town, never straying far from the inn. It was a pleasant distraction, the air and the sunlight. He looked up and caught a group of starlings startled from their roost. They spelled something out on the sky, their shapes against the vivid blue and ever-changing sentence. Passing over the sun, they were rendered into something glorious, and he felt he understood. "All of it is magic," he thought. Then he wondered if what he had understood had actually been Childermas calling his name. He turned back to face the posting inn, but took a moment or two to return to himself.
"Mr. Segundus!"
He caught Childermas's shout and saw him stalking toward him from the carriage, his greatcoat catching in the wind and billowing behind him, his hair blowing wildly about in the same breeze. The sun caught the edge of him, and he glowed with it, like some kind of avenging angel. Segundus thought he might have seen himself watching the scene from the side or above, a sensation that left him lightheaded. "I'm coming," he called, and was surprised by the weakness of his voice. As he hurried forward, he felt his mind catch up with his body in a sudden lurch that made him stumble. Childermas ushered him back into the carriage, and it set off before he'd had a chance to sit down.
"What were you up to there, man, watching the clouds?"
He didn't care for that note of irritation in Childermas's voice. "What was the meaning of that card?" he asked, instead of answering, because in truth he was not sure what he had been doing. He felt he had accomplished something from it, but was unsure what. "When you read my cards yesterday. The sun, was it?"
Childermas gave him a curious look, but said, "Your hopes will become reality, and you will make a success of things."
Segundus smiled, felt the burning of it in his cheeks and in his chest, and inclined his head toward Childermas in thanks.
"I believe I shall.
Now, what were the corrections you recommended?"